News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Last month, Jeff Shop, the self-styled commander of one of the largest neo-Nazi groups in the United States, took to a Russia's version of Facebook to update his followers about a brewing scandal. His group, the National Socialist Movement, was outraged over his bizarre decision to hand over the reins to a black civil rights activist, and he wanted to set the record straight. Addressing fellow patriots of the National Socialist Movement, Shep wrote in a March 2nd post that he had been deceived by James Stern, who had convinced him to sign over NSM's presidency to him in order to shield the group from an ongoing lawsuit. National security correspondent Jeff Seldon says that President Donald Trump tells us that the more troops will need to be sent to the country's southern border because too many dangerous people are illegally entering the United States. The acting defense secretary, Pat Shanahan, asked by reporters earlier in the day about a possible multi-year deployment of troops to the border, responded saying he had been speaking at length about that with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, headed for a fifth term in power. As his main rival, Benny Gantz, acknowledged he would not be able to form a coalition government following a tight parliamentary election. AP correspondent Charles Ledesma.
The nation's president, Reuven Rivlin, acting in a largely ceremonial capacity, will choose a candidate for prime minister after hearing recommendations from the heads of all factions. He will then task the leading candidate with forming a government within 42 days. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears poised to be the president's choice, with close to complete unofficial election results giving his right-wing Likud and other nationalist and religious parties a solid majority in parliament. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And this is VOA News. U.S. Attorney General William Barr says he is investigating how another investigation, that is the Russian involvement in the 2016 Trump presidential campaign, began.
The president wants the Justice Department to look at how the probe began.
Because this was an illegal witch hunt.
Which he says involved dirty cops and bad people.
What they did was treason.
Even as he blasted the probe to reporters, the president also professed not to care about Special Counsel Bob Mueller's report, which he says totally exonerated him.
No collusion, no obstruction. I won.
Though the attorney general says Mueller did not rule either way on whether the president committed obstruction. Sagar Magani, Washington.
President Trump signed an executive order seeking changes to environmental regulations as part of his desire to boost the country's energy production. One of the orders directs the Transportation Department to propose a new rule allowing liquid natural gas to be shipped in rail cars. New Zealand's parliament approved the ban on automatic and semi-automatic weapons, a dramatic step in the wake of last month's mosque shooting attacks that took 50 lives in Christchurch. That vote was 119-1. During the bill's final reading in the House of Representatives, the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern spoke with emotion. The bill is expected to become law on Friday. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence called on the United Nations to stand up for democracy and recognize Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido as the country's legitimate leader. Pence said the United States is working on a U.N. resolution to recognize the legitimacy of the government of Guaido and urged the international community to support it as well. Pence reiterated that the United States will continue to exert diplomatic and economic pressure to bring about a peaceful transition to democracy in Venezuela. The risk of being kidnapped or taken hostage is being added to the travel advisories issued by the U.S. State Department. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
The State Department usually warns travelers about things like crime, civil unrest, and potential for terrorism. But now they've added something new, a K indicator for the potential to be kidnapped. It's been issued for 35 countries. The new designation comes after the release of a California woman who had been held for a week after being kidnapped by gunmen in a national park in Uganda. Among the countries making the initial list, Afghanistan, Mexico, Lebanon, Venezuela, and Uganda. Shelley Adler, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo defended President Trump's decision to halt American aid to three Central American nations from which record numbers of migrants have fled to the U.S.-Mexico border. Pompeo spoke 2 weeks after Mr. Trump announced he would cut aid Congress had approved to fight hunger, violence, and drug trafficking in the poverty-stricken nations to chastise them. I'm Tommy McNeil, the VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 11th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The fight for Libya's capital escalates as the UN holds urgent consultations.
It cannot only just be a political negotiation at this point. What we need is a three-tier track process, a political one, a military one, and a financial one.
That's senior analyst Claudia Gazzini. Anti-Bashir protests continue in Sudan with army protection. HIV-positive Kenyan women protest to demand access to the DTG drug. African countries feel the pinch as development aid fell in 2018. And Nigeria's Elections Commission will conduct a review of the 2019 general election.
The commission will constitute a committee to look at the conduct of the election, the plans we made, whether we were able to actualize all the plans. If we were not able to actualize all the plans, what happened?
Rotimi Oyakhimin is the chief press secretary to Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission chairman, Makmun Yakubu. And gender inequality robs women of their sexual and reproductive rights. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Security Council is discussing Libya, where fighting is underway on the outskirts of Tripoli between Eastern forces and those loyal to UN-backed government. As Sabina Castelfranco reports for VOA, a national conference aimed at drawing up a roadmap to general elections has been postponed.
The fighting in Libya is between eastern-based forces loyal to Khalifa Haftar and armed groups allied to the UN-backed government in Tripoli. The Haftar offensive launched last week aims to take control of the Libyan capital. Due to the conflict, UN Special Envoy Ghassem Salame announced a postponement Wednesday of a national conference planned for next week. The International Crisis Group, an independent organization working to prevent wars, said serious efforts must be made to prevent a bloodbath in Tripoli and a dangerous escalation of the conflict involving regional powers. Senior analyst Claudia Gazzini says political negotiations need to be inclusive and not limited to just Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj and Eastern Commander Haftar.
What the UN needs to do is not only broaden the number of people involved in the negotiations and reflective of the multiplicity of Libya's political factions, but needs to change the format in the sense that it cannot only just be a political negotiation at this point. What we need is a three-tier track process, a political one, a military one, and a financial one.
Gazzini added, a new negotiation format should be backed by the United Nations, European governments, and Washington. The International Crisis Group said members of the UN Security Council should call for an immediate end to the fighting. Gazzini said military commanders of the fighting coalitions need to come together to agree on a new security arrangement for the capital. But the present situation is quite different.
The battle is still wide open. The problem is that both sides, the Haftar side and the Tripoli Misrata side, are digging in and appear to be keen to carry out a full-out war. That for the Haftar side means the complete capture of Tripoli, and for the Tripoli side means hitting Haftar even in his rear base in eastern Libya. So there's very little willingness today for compromise, and the outcome of the war is uncertain.
Gazzini said a protracted war in Tripoli could be dangerous for European countries, leading to an increased flow of migrants. It also opens the doors for radical Islamist groups to operate in Libya and risks damaging Libyan economic infrastructure that some European countries depend on. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Tens of thousands of protesters have been gathered around Sudan's army headquarters since Saturday, demanding that President Omar al-Bashir be removed from power. At least 22 people have been killed in clashes with security forces, according to activists. Meanwhile, reports say the government and its allied parties called off a rally that was scheduled to be held today, Thursday. The Security Committee reportedly said it refused to grant permission due to the security conditions in the capital. Nama Muhyiddin has more from Khartoum.
Ahmed Attayeb is a former lieutenant colonel in Sudan's army who resigned when President Omar al-Bashir came to power in 1989. 30 years later, he came to sit outside army headquarters with many retired ex-officers, chanting anti-Bashir slogans and voicing support for army troops who have defended protesters. He says that they support army troops and protesters' rights. They will not step back until we establish a great country. At least 22 people have been killed in clashes with security forces, according to activists. That include 5 soldiers killed after troops clashed with police trying to disperse the protesters. The head of the army's rapid support forces said in a televised speech Tuesday, the army will not break a peaceful protest. He said that his troops will never interfere in non-violent, constitutionally authorized protests since the first day. This is the army, First Lieutenant Ahmed Siddiq is speaking to protesters on Tuesday in the middle of chants and cheers. Siddiq said he's urging honorable soldiers in all army forces to stand by protesters. The demonstrations began in December to protest a steep hike in bread prices, but quickly changed into general protest against Bashir. The spokesman of Bashir's government, Hassan Ismail, told VOA that the only solution to Sudan's political crisis is dialogue. He said that ongoing sit-in was arranged by opposition group, which resist the dialogue. The Sudan sit-in has entered a new level. It's gone on for 5 nights, despite of the deadly first night. Observers say a military coup against Bashir is possible, but the international community is hoping that Bashir can be persuaded to step aside. On Tuesday, the United States, Britain, and Norway demanded Sudanese authorities deliver a credible plan for political transition. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, says it will conduct an extensive review of the 2019 general elections. The commission came under heavy criticism when it abruptly postponed the February 16 presidential election by a week due to unspecified challenges, but amid reports that voting materials had not been delivered to all parts of the country. Rotimi Oyakhemin is the chief press secretary to Nigeria's Electoral Commission chairman, Makmu Yakubu. He says the review will look at the overall conduct of the election, including the legal environment, logistics, procurement, and deployment of personnel and materials, and whether or not the commission was able to actualize its plans.
This is not the first time that we are reviewing the general election. In 2011 and 2015, after the general election, the commission will constitute a committee to look at the conduct of the election, the plans we made, whether we were able to actualize all the plans. If we were not able to actualize all the plans, what happened and why did they happen? And how can we prevent incidences that were negative in the plan? We are going to be looking at those timelines to see which aspects we faithfully implemented and which aspects we failed to implement, and to find out why those things happened, including the extraneous factors that came into play that we didn't plan for, and how did we handle those things. So these issues are necessary, these lessons are necessary, so that when we have it in next general election in 2023, we will not repeat the same mistake.
One of the issues that you want to review is the legal environment of the election. Particularly, you say here, the legal challenges that you experienced over the nomination of candidates and the conduct of the elections. Was the commission surprised by the legal issues that came out of the last election?
Well, I will not say the commission is surprised. I will say that we would have wished that this thing did not happen. Unfortunately, I don't feel proud to say this. In Nigeria, politicians are litigation happy. They go to court for every little thing. And it's the kind of politics we play. The politics of do or die, the politics of winner takes all, the politics of not admitting defeat. A typical Nigerian politician goes into election without making provision for the fact that it could be defeated. When they are defeated, they are rigged out. When they win, then that's when the election is credible. But what we are trying to say is that we need to develop the spirit of sportsmanship from politicians. And we hope that going forward, they will learn this lesson and we will have less litigation.
Rotimi, your commission was heavily criticized, particularly with the postponement or the delay in the 2019 election. On top of your list of issues that you want to review is that of logistics, procurement, and deployment of personnel and materials.
First and foremost, the Commission regretted heavily the fact that they had to postpone the 2019 general election. We did not plan to postpone. At the same time, the time that decision was taken, it was the best option. Because basically what happened in summary was that the Commission was unable to deliver all the election materials to all the local governments where the elections would take place. The implication of that would have been that some people would get to their polling unit on the election day and the materials would not be there. And that would be dangerous because it would force us to not have staggered elections and it would lead to chaos.
Rotimi, thank you very much again. So nice to get this update.
Thank you for having me.
Rotimi Oyakemi is the Chief Press Secretary to Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission Chairman, Mahmud Yakubu. You are speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 11th. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says aid from donor nations fell last year compared to 2017, with some of the neediest countries feeling the pinch. Lisa Bryan reports from the French capital on the OECD's new report, which raises concerns about meeting United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
The OECD report released Wednesday finds that official donor aid among its member states was down 2.7% in 2018. One of the biggest declines was in humanitarian assistance, down 8% compared to 2017. Aid to African countries fell 4%. The OECD's head of development aid statistics, Yasmin Ahmad, says if support to refugees is taken out of the equation, in some cases because of fewer arrivals, the overall aid figure would remain unchanged. Ahmad, however, says the message is still alarming.
The OECD considers this trend quite worrisome because it shows that most donors are actually not living up to the commitment that they made in 2015, which was to increase their aid.
Ahmad says separate OECD findings also show foreign direct investment to developing countries dropped by about one-third from 2016 to 2017, among other downward trends.
What is particularly concerning as well is that the sustainable development goals, which are global, are supposed to happen. And so this drop in aid does not look good for being able to achieve these goals by 2030.
The reasons for the downturn vary. In Europe, some countries spent less on refugee assistance because fewer refugees arrived last year. Russian assistance dropped by more than 14%, reflecting an overall decline in its aid program. The United States cut foreign aid by 5% last year, including to Africa, although it remains the biggest donor.
However, this amount represents only 0.17 of its gross national income, which places it well below the average for members of the Development Assistance Committee, the average being 0.31%.
The OECD report finds a few bright spots. More than half a dozen countries worldwide met the UN aid spending target of 0.7% of GDP, and several, including France and Turkey, have increased development assistance. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Kenyan women living with HIV took to the streets Wednesday in the capital, Nairobi, to demand they be given the new HIV drug known as DTG. This after the Kenyan government, through its Ministry of Health, said the new drug that was meant to replace antiretroviral drugs was not suitable for young mothers and adolescents. Maureen Ojiambo has details from Nairobi.
The chants mad the streets of Nairobi as the young women and even commercial sex workers say they needed to use the DTGs, which they prefer compared to ARVs, which they say is overwhelming. Commercial sex worker Wanjiru Njiru says the government should look for alternatives to have the young women, especially those of the reproductive age, take the DTG drugs.
Today's march is about access to DTG for women, especially women of reproductive age. We as sex workers and women, we demand that we can access DTG, because right now DTG is not being given to women of reproductive ages, with the fact that They say it causes effects on the fetus. But we want the government to give us a choice and not force us to sign consent forms when we're accessing DTG.
In 2017, the government of Kenya and the UNITAID announced the introduction of a new first-line drug for people living with HIV, making Kenya the first African country to introduce the generic version of the new drug for routine use. Another woman who lives with HIV, Mary Akoth Omondi, says they have no access to those drugs despite of them not planning to have children because of their health status.
My message goes to KEMSA. I just want to ask KEMSA, why are they denying us to give us DTG and even condoms? Now we are sex workers, we don't have condoms. People are just doing sex without condoms. They don't want to give us DTG, and DTG is for all women.
DTG has been the drug of choice for some years for people living with HIV in high-income countries, as it has very few side effects. It's easier to take than currently used formulation, thus one tablet taken daily, and patients are less likely to develop resistance. Musali Alihanda from an organization that deals with young people living with HIV says women should not be signing for the DTG as they are required to do so by the hospitals before being given the drugs that have serious reproductive side effects.
Actually, the message we have now is we want ladies to be given rightful chance to choose the kind of medication they would want, because we realize our government is restricting women of reproductive age to access dolutegravir based on a research that was done in Botswana on positive women who took it and they had babies with neurotubal defect.
In 2015, the World Health Organization recommended DTG as an alternative first-line treatment for adults and adolescents. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A new report finds that gender inequality strips women of their ability to control their sexual and reproductive options and limits their right to choose when and if they wish to start a family. The United Nations Population Fund has released this year's State of the World Population Report titled Unfinished Business, The Pursuit of Rights and Choices for All. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Big gains have been made in reproductive rights over the past 50 years when the United Nations Population Fund was created. The number of births per woman has dropped by nearly half to 2.5 births. There's been a significant decrease in fertility rates in the least developed countries, as well as deaths from pregnancy-related causes. But the UNFPA reports more than 200 million women are subjected to unwanted pregnancies because they have no access to modern contraceptives. It says more than 800 women die every day from preventable causes during pregnancy and childbirth because many are unable to access reproductive health services. Director of UNFPA in Geneva, Monica Farrow, says gender inequality is the obstacle that underpins all others. She says gender unequal norms and attitudes are often used to control women's sexuality and reproduction.
Gender inequality limits the ability of women to freely make fundamental decisions about when and with whom to have sex, about the use of contraception or health care, and about whether and when to seek employment or whether to seek higher education.
The report says hundreds of millions of women worldwide are being left behind, unable to enjoy their rights to sexual and reproductive health. It says these women and girls typically are poorer, rural, and less educated. It says two-thirds of maternal deaths today occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Farrow tells VOA women fare best in countries that have invested most in gender equality policies and programs. Most of these countries are in the developed world.
If you look at the countries who are the most challenged ones, it's countries where women still face many barriers in accessing health, in accessing especially sexual reproductive health and rights. And this has to do also with specific challenges, be it specific economic crisis, shortfalls.
The UNFPA has set itself several ambitious goals, timed to meet the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. These include the elimination of preventable maternal deaths, creating universal access to family planning, and achieving zero tolerance for violent and abusive practices that harm women and girls. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Life is still far from normal in the port city of Beira following last month's devastating cyclone. Most businesses remain closed and the city's residents are hungry as they struggle to rebuild their lives. Mohammed Yusuf has this report from Beira.
39-year-old Maria Mushan's home was destroyed by the storm that hit central Mozambique, but she is slowly rebuilding her life.
I was supposed to feel Ariano.
She says she fixed her house using old iron sheets so she could have a roof and a place to hide. But she says when it rains, water comes in. Mushen survived the strong winds, but the electric pole and wires that nearly killed her when they collapsed have yet to be fixed. Many such wires are scattered across Beira, a sign the city administration is overwhelmed by Cyclone Idai that swept through Mozambique, Zimbabwe and Malawi. The storm hit Mozambique in March, killing more than 800 people and leaving hundreds of thousands homeless or displaced. Some people are starting to rebuild their lives, but for those who cannot afford to, end up in accommodation centres. Victoria Joan says she has nowhere to go out of the accommodation centre because the storm destroyed the house a church gave her. More than 150,000 displaced persons from three neighbouring districts around Beira are being sheltered in the port city. Some, like Maria Joao, who fled the town of Buzi, is afraid of returning to her home because the flood that killed their neighbours. She says she doesn't have a plan to go back unless maybe she gets a home on higher ground water cannot reach. She says the water was too much and the floods could come back again next year. While some businesses have reopened, many remain closed. Goods stored in storm-damaged warehouses have to be moved to safer places. Despite the challenges, Beira City Mayor Davis Simango says everyone has a role to play in rebuilding the ravaged city.
We are going to rebuild the city. Your hands will also help to rebuild the city. So I think that it will be useful for us. The most important that as more people you have in the city, more pressure you have in the infrastructures. I'm talking about public infrastructures. So now we need to rebuild quickly the public infrastructure so we can support that pressure which we're having now.
But in nearly a month since Cyclone Idai destroyed their world, survivors see no end in sight to the many problems caused by the massive storm. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Beira, Mozambique.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Fighting between rival Libyan governments for control of Tripoli worsened on Wednesday as the United Nations Security Council gets ready to meet on the crisis. General Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army has set up an administration in the east. His forces are battling troops belonging to Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj and his internationally recognized Libyan government in Tripoli in the west. And the International Monetary Fund is recommending countries undertake a series of reforms, including tackling corruption, in order to promote not only higher economic growth, but also growth that is more inclusive of various parts of the population. And that is it for this Thursday, April 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton, Washington. And I'm wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free, pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.